Hello, and welcome back to the Truly Horrible NBA podcast. I'm your host, Connor Allen, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Daniel Porter.
Hello. Thank you for having me again, listeners and Connor.
So to start off, we talk about mistakes we made last time.
I think it's important to just come clean and be forthright, you know, because that's really the only way for us to grow as a podcast.
Yeah, and nobody's perfect.
Look, we're not called the Very Good Basketball Podcast.
No.
That would be a whole different thing, but this is the Truly Horrible Basketball Podcast, so, you know, sometimes we screw up.
So, the big mistake we made last podcast in the Atlanta Hawks rebuild is that we mistakenly said that Dwight Howard was signed after Al Horford had signed for the Celtics, and while Dwight Howard was officially signed on a later date than Al Horford's contract was completed, he had actually agreed to that contract prior to Al Horford departing for the Celtics, and the Hawks were at the time trying to pitch the idea of playing Horford, Howard, and Millsap all together and having all three of them.
Which would have been a disaster, by the way. Yeah. But still, terrible mistake.
And that was pointed out by Reddit user Who's Your Papa. Thank you to Reddit user Who's Your Papa. We love the feedback.
He's probably never going to listen to us because of that mistake. But if he ever were to, that would be cool.
Yeah. And next, moving on, you know, our other tradition at the beginning of the podcast is we have to read our review of the week.
Yep. And, you know, we have so many 5-star reviews to choose from. It's really starting to become a heavy burden for the pod. But by all means, you know, continue to rate 5 stars. We'll read them all eventually.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get around to it. Look,
we're busy guys, and we have, like, you know, 9 whole 5-star reviews now. You could be the 10th. That's the thing. If you're listening to this and you haven't given us a 5-star review, just know that. You could get us to double digits. Anyway.
So, the review is titled, Igor Kokoshkov. High quality content. Follow for cogent. Wow, I messed up the word I was even worried about. Cogent analysis about one of the most important questions in basketball. Team building philosophy. Except you all need to learn how to say Kokoshkov rather than Coach Igor. Since I know you will read this on the pod, here is some free practice. Kokoshkov, 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 Kokoshkov. Well, thank you very much, Knicks fan 192.
Wow, we're even getting some attention from Knicks fans now. And, you know, it's only a matter of time, really, before they're one of the featured teams on this pod.
So yeah, one of those rare Knicks Kokoshkov fans that you can get in NBA circles.
Shout out to, here, let me get some practice too, Igor Kokoshkov.
Yeah, there we go, well done. So today we're talking about the Orlando Magic rebuild, and for us, there's a pretty clear starting point for this rebuild, and it was the Dwight Howard trade, you know, the end of the Dwight mare.
It's been a long, rocky road since then. But that does make the most sense. I mean, that's when their team fundamentally transitioned to a point of, you know, rebuild. They've been bad ever since.
Yeah, and really, it's been a really depressing rebuild in the sense of that I actually think they've made
good I mean, it's not necessarily just about wins and losses. Think of the friends we've made along the way.
Yeah, true. The friends who have gone on to have way more success in other situations.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, yeah. I mean, you know, it hasn't been the brightest NBA situation in recent years.
So it starts off August 10th, 2012. The Orlando Magic traded Jason Richardson, Earl Clark, Chris Duhon, and Dwight Howard, and got back Aaron Aflalo, Al Harrington, Christian Yenga, Josh McRoberts, Mo Harkless, Nikola Vucevic, a 2013 second, a 2014 first from the Nuggets, a 2017 second, a 2017 first from the Sixers, and a 2017 first from the Lakers, which never conveyed, and as a result became 2 second-round picks.
So interestingly, this was a really good trade.
Absolutely.
If you look at this Magic rebuild, it's been a huge failure, but it's not because they didn't do a good job capitalizing on Dwight Howard. That's one of the better superstar trades we've seen in the last 10, 15 years.
Yeah, because he only had 1 year left on his contract. He was an expiring contract. I mean, remember, they managed to get him to opt in by having his favorite candy on the plane, and then they were able to take advantage of that and trade him with a full year left on his deal. Like, that worked out really well for the Magic. And look, they got what potentially could have been 3 first-round picks. If the Lakers hadn't had such amazing lottery luck these past few years where they kept jumping up and saving that pick would have been, the Magic would own the Lakers pick, first-round pick, coming year.
A stroke of bad luck, you know? That's just another good first-round pick. And you do need to get lucky, too. That's the thing. And the Magic certainly have not gotten lucky in the last 6 years.
No, a lot of bad luck. But sometimes, and as we'll really harp on throughout this, you have to be making moves and giving yourselves opportunities to get lucky, and they were just very stagnant for most of this rebuild. And you can't do that as a rebuilding team. You have to be churning over the roster.
Big moves necessarily.
Yep.
And that's so, you know,
But look, when you turn Dwight Howard into Mo Harkless, who was just, he was a rookie, Vucevic, so who was a second-year player, and potentially three first-round picks, as well as getting like a quality player like Aaron Aflalo back, like, you did really well in your superstar trade. That's one of the best ones of the recent years. And so for me, like, that's an A. That's a pretty clear A. They did a great job turning a bad situation into a good base to start a rebuild from, regardless of how the results actually worked out.
I agree.
So then on February 21st, 2013, the Magic traded J.J. Redick, Gustav Ion, and Ish Smith to the Bucks for Tobias Harris, Dorian Lamb, and Beno Udre, and cash considerations. That's an A. It's tough. I mean, J.J. Redick is probably actually still the best player in that trade, but he had 1 year left on his deal, an expiring contract for a veteran, and they got back, you know, a young player in Tobias Harris, who was on the second year of his rookie deal. You know, you have to like that return.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I mean, it sounds weird, right? Like, you think that maybe that's not that good of value for J.J., but then you think about the fact that, I mean, everything J.J. Redick has accomplished since that trade, basically, like, they had no way of knowing that at the time, and it probably would not have happened had he stayed on the Magic. I mean, it's partially just been a virtue of the fact that he's been a guy who gets lots of open shots on good teams.
And he's had
But Tobias Harris is a second-year player. Like, that's good value for a veteran role guy. Tobias Harris has turned into a nice role player. It's starter, quality starter in and of himself.
And how are you supposed to know that J.J. Redick was going to have such a long, like, slow decline? Like, the way he's able to extend his career?
You can kind of project that with shooting. I think that a lot of guys who are really, really elite shooters play well into their 30s.
Yeah. And so maybe you should have forecast that. But look, J.J. Redick helping these Magic teams, if they'd re-signed him, he'd won them a few more games each year.
It wouldn't really have been helpful. Yeah.
So then on June 27, 2013, they drafted Victor Oladipo second overall. And then they drafted Romero Osby at 51. Osby's never played in the NBA.
So Oladipo, it's hard to grade or evaluate that. I mean, based on everything we know about that draft and who the best players from it are right now, Oladipo clearly was the right pick at number two. I mean, especially this past year, he just broke out. But before this year, he really hadn't been as good. And I think there's a legitimate question as to if he would have been able to thrive like he has had he stayed in Orlando.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's tough because, I mean, look, he isn't the best player from the draft. The best player is Giannis Antetokounmpo.
But you weren't going to take him at two.
Yeah, or Gobert. And, like, look, none of those guys, like, that draft was weird because all the best players came in, like, the second half of the first round.
It's a weird draft in general.
And it's just, like, all the statistics, all the, like, what you would expect is just blown out of proportion.
But Oladipo's an all-star. You know? And if you have a top two pick, you'd love to come away with an all-star.
And so, for me, I gave that grade a B+, because he never actually showed any of the, like, player he really became in Orlando. I mean, some of the reason he ended up becoming good because of what happened in Orlando, they kind of pushed him to be a primary ball handler at times there, and that helped him develop, and you really saw that with the Pacers this year, is his comfort with the ball in his hands and everything. But the Magic didn't reap any of the benefit of Victor Oladipo based on the way that he developed. You know, he had this really huge development leap just in this past year.
Right. So it's almost like a separate grade. The pick itself was an A, but the team's development of him was like a C.
Yep. So then for the rest of the 2013 offseason, the Magic didn't do much, which once again will be a running theme of the Magic offseason. They signed Jason Maxiell and Ronnie Price, who were both 30 years old at the time. Those were the only two signings they made for a team that was clearly rebuilding. They were 1 year into their rebuild, and they brought in no young talent and just two old veterans. Now, they didn't give them big contracts, and I have no issue bringing in a couple of veteran presents, but to not even take a chance at really signing some young guys, giving someone a restricted free agency offer, any of that, is disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's been a few years. It's hard to even necessarily remember what the whole league-wide landscape was like then or what kind of offers they might have had on the table, but it does suggest a pretty passive approach, and in the situation they were in where, like, they had just traded Dwight, they had a pretty bare cupboard, not a whole lot of assets. It would have been nice to see them, you know, do something a little more proactive.
Yep, and look, that's just it's one of the things that the Magic, in general, took much more of a keep an intact roster, keep continuity, and not be shuffling the bottom of the roster. But when you're bad, you want to be shuffling the bottom of the roster a little and searching for those.
Just to give guys a chance. Yep. You look at the transaction logs for some of these really bad teams, and they're like just running guys through, signing guys, cutting guys, but giving guys a chance. And every once in a while, you end up, I mean, look at the Sixers, you know, yep. You get Robert Covington and TJ McConnell out of it. And the Magic have not been that team.
Yep. And speaking of guy who went through the Sixers cog before ending up with the Magic, on February 25th, 2014, the Magic signed Dwayne Dedman to a 10-day contract, then eventually signed him to the rest of the year, and then signed him for 2 years.
So it's like really the only diamond in the rough they found during this rebuild, yep. Right? And, I mean...
But that's what we're looking for.
Dedman's like, a solid guy. Yeah. If you can get him off the street, great.
Yep. And so I look, for me, that's an A minus. I just think like that's really good. Look, he didn't end up really becoming his best form with the Magic, but that's what I'm saying. Like the idea of just like shuffling the bottom of the roster, looking for guys like Dwayne Dedman
who can actually look at how much money he made then versus how much money he makes now.
Yep, exactly. So then on June 26, 2014, the Magic drafted Aaron Gordon fourth overall. And then they traded, the other move they made is they traded Dario Saric, a 2015 second, and a 2017 first, which was the Sixers first, to Philly for Elfrid Payton.
So we'll talk about these two moves separately. Yes. The Gordon pick, I don't know what you had for a grade, but it's probably solidly like a B+.
Yeah, that's an A- for me.
A-.
I liked that pick at the time. I mean, yeah. I was really high on Aaron Gordon. And if you look at what ended up happening with that draft, I mean, there's no one in the next, like, till Devin Booker. No, wait, no, that's the next draft. But if you really go through it, because It was Smart.
Randall, who were picked right after
Randall.
Him. And yeah, you'd probably rather have Aaron Gordon than either of those guys.
And we're missing, actually, who was the fifth pick? Because Smart and Randall were 6 and 7.
It was Exum?
Exum. And then it was Nick Stauskas. And then it was Kaminsky. And then it was... No, that was...
No.
Flip, I'm mixing 14, 15.
Twisting drafts again.
But yeah, the point is, like, no one who came right after, and the 2014 draft was so hyped. It was supposed to be so good. And
it wasn't
everyone was
really
so disappointing.
Yeah.
It was Noah Vonleh went 9. Okay. And no one who went after it. Aaron Gordon, ultimately, like, if you look at the guys, because really you should look at the next, like, kind of 4 or 5 guys who get picked every pick to think who are possibilities that could have gone there. Aaron Gordon is far and away the best player of that bunch and the guy you want going forward. And he's the youngest. He was so young in the draft. And so for me, like, that's an A-. They did really good.
Yeah.
He's not a superstar, like, fourth overall pick, but he's a really good
quality.
He
seems like a modern NBA player. Yeah. I would like to see and be interested in seeing some super small lineups with Gordon at the 5.
Yes.
Because he's such a good athlete, and I really think, I mean, you know, if you look at his body compared to, like, a Draymond Green, and Draymond, I mean, he's one of the most valuable players in the league, I think, because of the fact that he can play the 5 and switch onto wings, at least in the playoffs.
Yep.
And Aaron Gordon, I think, could do that too, at least on small, like, non-offensively threatening bigs, small,
yep,
or not. I mean, you could be, you know, like, Gordon could guard Aaron Baines.
Absolutely. And it could be like a crunch time lineup more. I mean, I don't know if you can play him at the 5 for 20 minutes
no,
a game or
it
anything.
It definitely
like
can't
that,
be your plan all season, but if he were on a playoff team, I would love to see them try to unlock that.
I want
to
see him on a playoff
shooters
team in general. So much of what he offers is so much more important and valuable to a playoff team than to a team that is competing for
and
the
fifth. And to see how his skill,
game.
I mean, it'll be a good test for how good he actually is, too, because when you're just on bad teams year after year and you are bound to get offensive looks, I mean, you know, some guys break out when they get playoff opportunities and some guys get exposed.
Yeah, and talking about Aaron Gordon a little, I do want to make the point, you know, the Magic during this rebuild caught a lot of flack for trying to play him at the 3. And while that was ultimately horrible for them winning that year, I actually personally always talk a lot about downside, like playing a guy one position lower, so playing a 2 guard at the 1 or playing a 3 at the 2 or playing a 4 at the 3 during their young years of development so they get more comfortable with the ball and everything. And then when a team ultimately shifts into contention mode, you actually shift everyone down a position. So that person who was playing the 3 shifts down to a 4 and everything, but now they're so much more comfortable with the ball, they're probably a little bit better of a shooter because they've been forced in those positions. And so the Magic forcing Gordon to the 3 is a perfect example of that, where long-term he's a 4 or even in certain situations like you talked about, a 5, but that year he spent at the 3 is probably actually very important for his long-term development.
Yeah. You, that's a very PJ Carlissimo friendly take.
Oh yeah, Kevin Durant,
Durant
at the 2. Yeah, I'm not dead serious. I probably would have played Kevin Durant at the 2 at his rookie year, and I think
well,
it
he
helped
was really
his development.
Weak, and yeah, probably might have helped his development. Who knows? I mean, obviously Carlissimo gets killed for that, and Durant's
yeah
statistics from that year compared to the rest of his career are way worse. But
I think you learn a lot. And look, I think the idea actually with Russell Westbrook, they should have played him at the 1 and then eventually made him a 2 because he's actually a 2 guard. And the problem is that he just got left with the ball in his hands and he shouldn't be running the offense.
Yeah, but I definitely think that Gordon projects to be like a really strong, probably above average starting 4.
I think, and look, this is me being really hard on him, I think there's a non-zero chance he still makes All-Star games in his future.
Yeah, he could. I wouldn't be shocked to see him as like an All-Star bench
yep
type guy.
And then we should talk about the other move, the much less inspiring
oh,
move
yeah
from the 2014
considerably
draft
worse move. That Elfrid Payton trade. You want to read it off again?
Yeah, so Dario Saric, a 2015 second round pick, and a 2017 first round pick, which was the Sixers 2017 first round pick, to Philly, and they got Elfrid Payton in exchange. That's an F.
It's pretty bad.
Horrible.
I mean, what we've learned since Elfrid Payton is basically that you just can't spend a lottery pick, especially a pick that high, and that much draft capital on a point guard who can't shoot.
I mean, people did it in last year's draft.
True. It'll probably happen again in this year's draft. But it's really, it's never a good move, and Elfrid Payton is an example of why. And he could still become at least like a solid starter in the league. I mean, point guards are slow. guards are slow in general, but point guards are really slow to develop. But still, the Magic did not like get that amount of value out of the trade.
And because point guards are so slow to draft, you don't want to be spending your lottery picks where you're trying to generate surplus value on them nearly as much. They need to be really transcendent to draft. Otherwise, because there's such a surplus of point guards in the league, you should probably just wait and play the free agency game.
Well, I think if you and I were in charge of a team right now that had a high lottery pick, we would definitely be prioritizing wings.
Yes, wings, that's the wings, most
important,
wings.
Easily the most important position in the league, and you can never have too many wings. And guys who can guard multiple positions and who can switch. So point guards and centers, and guys especially who can really only play either of those positions, are less valuable.
Yep, and just one more thing with the Alfred Payne trade. This is just another example of not trying to think that you're smarter than everyone else and you can see some other person is just a hidden gem or whatever, because trading up is like inherently in the idea of trading up is that you believe that you have done a better job evaluating this player and you have a better understanding of who this player is and you clearly see how good this player is when no one else does.
Compared to you're almost always overpaying.
Yep, you're overpaying to trade up. That's one of the like parts of trading up, and it's just, it's almost never smart. And look, one of the best moves of the Sam Hinkie tenure was this trade, because there was a trade down. They picked up that 2017 first, which ultimately, you know, they ended up using the package, you know, through the pick swap and then packaged with the Kings Lakers pick to take Fultz. But you know what? Like, that's a pick that you want if you're the Magic. And so that's a painful move. That's one of the moves you look back on at this rebuild and you just shake your head and you go, man, that's really one of the places where they dropped the ball.
Just another combination of bad luck and bad decisions.
Yep. And then in June 27, 2014, they traded Aaron Aflalo for Evan Fournier and Devin Marble. Look, that's an A. They traded an aging Aaron Aflalo for a young guy like Evan Fournier, who ended up becoming, you know, really good by the end of his rookie contract.
You'd definitely rather have Fournier than Aflalo right now. Even and if we think that the Magic should probably be looking to trade Fournier, you'd expect to get back some solid value. You could probably get another young wing, you know, just keep flipping that trade over.
Yep, exactly. So look, that's a good move. That's the type of stuff you want to be doing when you're rebuilding. Look, turn a 30-year-old Aaron Aflalo into a young piece who can fit your core. And at this point in time, like, if you really think about this Magic team, look, the core, they had Oladipo, they had Mo Harkless, they had Vucevic, they had Aaron Gordon, they had Alfred Payton, they had Evan Fournier. Look,
it's a lot of nice players.
Players. Problem is, just no stars, and they end up trading away the one guy who kind of becomes a superstar in Victor Oladipo. And that's why this rebuild doesn't work. But if you actually look at the players they were acquiring throughout it, it's why this rebuild is so frustrating. They were taking guys I sort of liked at the time. I was like, I can kind of see this working. It's just they never fit that well together, and they weren't patient enough, and they weren't doing enough around the edges to really complement the guys they were getting with, like,
I think also they just at no point really, and I guess maybe Oladipo could have been this, I don't know, but they haven't had a guy who can just take over games and like get you a bucket. Right. They haven't had enough offense.
No, I'm definitely not on the Magic team now. Oladipo is at that point now, but not, who knows if he would have been there when he stayed. And then the rest of the offseason, though, their two signings, they signed Ben Gordon and Channing Frye, and they gave Channing Frye a huge contract, who they ultimately were able to trade.
Those were brutal. They've done that like several times during this rebuild, just sort of thrown money at veterans to try to accelerate the timeline, but it's never been guys who are good enough.
Wait, why are you signing two 31-year-olds when your team is not good? It's just so frustrating.
31-year-olds who aren't going to like really change the world for you either. Probably not even going to start.
Yep. And so then, you know, February 5th, 2015, due to, you know, an uninspiring and disappointing start after, you know, they tried to accelerate the timeline by signing veterans, the Magic fired Jacque Vaughn as their head coach. Look, he wasn't a good coach. He hasn't gotten any other opportunities.
Also wasn't a super talented team. I mean, he didn't have that much to work with. Ben Gordon and Channing Frye are not good vets. The other guys, I mean, Oladipo still wasn't coming along as quickly as they would have liked, I guess. Alfred Payton and Aaron Gordon struggled out of the gate. I think both of them had injuries too.
Yeah, it's just, you know, frankly, I don't have that much to say on it, because I don't think he had very good talent. Like, they had young talent, just not winning talent. But he also hasn't gotten, you know, a chance, or even, you haven't even heard his name whispered, which means that I think most people around the league viewed his, the coaching job he did, as bad, on top of him not having a good situation.
Yep.
And then May 29th, 2015, they hired Scott Skiles as head coach. That's a D for me, because they brought him in, they tried to accelerate the timeline, everything that he did, they accelerated the timeline, and they fired him a year later.
Yeah, Scott Skiles is not a good coach for a young team. He's famously like a huge disciplinarian who just loves to ride young guys.
And
tough love. And like, I mean, I don't think this is, That's really a good philosophy.
Yeah, I'll take. I like the Brett Brown approach to working with young guys much more. Really inspire them, work with them, understand that young people are.
Look at how Spoelstra is too. I mean, yep. Heat have developed young guys exceptionally well, and I think Spoelstra really is good.
Spoelstra's tough, but in like a compassionate way. You know, there's a difference. Like Greg Popovich is tough, but in a compassionate way. There's a difference between guys who are tough but compassionate and guys who are just all tough love.
Yeah.
Like a Tom Thibodeau. Then June 25th, 2015. They drafted Mario Hezonja, 5th overall, and they drafted Tyler Harvey, 51st overall. Nothing really from the 51st pick, but Hezonja at 5.
Barely anything from the 5th pick. You know, I mean, we both probably still, I would say I'm in at least like the 60th or 70th percentile of NBA fans in terms of how much I like Hezonja. Like, I would give him a chance, but he's definitely a bust as of right now. He could work his way back.
Absolutely, but at the same time, I think we both are critical of the Magic decision to not pick up his fourth-year team option. Because
yeah, you always got to pick those up. And it's just like you're really increasing the chances, basically guaranteeing that you're going to lose the guy for nothing.
And he's shown flash. Like, the second half of this past season, he showed flashes. Started,
I mean, before that, he'd been pretty damn bad.
But we were finally seeing it. Like, you really are starting to see
it. And also, I mean, if they... Here's the thing. This team should have been more committed to being bad, right? And, like, less delusional about their chances of winning. So they could have been playing Hezonja more. And they could have accelerated that development. But he hasn't really played that much. And now, finally, this year, he starts to... show something. I mean, if it's not with the Magic, he definitely will be in the NBA for several more years.
Absolutely. And I think now I'm pretty confident. I think he's going to carve out a role in the NBA. Now, whether he's going to be a starter.
He could be Wesley Johnson still, you know.
But that's a role. That's a guy. Wesley Johnson has a role.
But you're not like at all happy about either of those guys from their draft position.
Absolutely not. And I think Hezonja is probably almost certainly going to be a disappointment from his draft position. But that doesn't mean that it's worth losing him.
Is he a C minus or an F? Is basically the Hezonja conversation right now.
Yep. And then the 2015 offseason, the rest of the offseason, incredibly frustrating. They signed C.J. Watson, who was 31 years old at the time, to a 3-year, $15 million contract.
Hey, you gotta have him mentor Elfrid Payton or something.
So that's an F. Because once again, if you wanted to give him a 1-year, $8 million contract or 1-year, 10, I'm actually fine with that. But 3 for 15, that's two more off seasons where he's on your books.
It just seems like doing something just to do something. Like, it doesn't seem like it's attached or tethered to any broader strategy. It's like, hey, this guy's kind of good. He'll sign with us.
And then they traded Kylo Quinn to the Knicks in a sign-and-trade, and all they got out of that was swapping 2019 seconds. But look, you know, they didn't want to bring him back. Getting anything in a sign-and-trade is sort of good, but Kylo Quinn...
Quinn has been solid, especially since going to the Knicks, and he plays good defense. I mean, you know, it's
that's
not
just
like,
kind of a... I don't have that much to say about that. They maybe should have brought him back, but it's not like it's a huge loss.
It would have been nice if they could just get a second. I guess O'Quinn is probably leaving. Regardless.
Yeah. They signed Jason Smith, who was 29 years old at the time, to a 1-year, $4.3 million contract. This is fine, because once again, we talk about years, not dollars. You know, if you want to bring in a veteran for 1 year, that's fine. This is not the type of move I'm going to kill. Yeah, it's giving three years that I'm going to kill. They signed Tobias Harris to a 4-year, $64 million contract. That's a good contract.
Deal. Yep, he's definitely lived up to that.
We'll talk about that move very shortly, but they salary dump him. Spoiler alert. And then probably the worst move that they made in the offseason, they traded Mo Harkless to the Blazers for a 2020 second that's top 55 protected. They gave away Mo Harkless, who became a quality NBA role piece.
Right, and they just, I mean, here's the thing. This is why I'm optimistic about Hezonja. Like, they just did not develop Mo Harkless, and then as soon as he left, he's been solid. You would want Mo Harkless on your team.
Absolutely.
Even if you were the Magic. He's young enough, too. What is he, 24, 25?
I think he's probably like 26 now. Let me check. I'll search that real quick. But, I mean, look, young. Not to the point where he's 25 still. Turns 26. And actually just turned 25, so he's still so young. You're right. It's just brutal.
I love that Mo Harkless thing about how he always has those 3-point incentives in his contract and just like stop shooting threes at the end of the year because he's barely over 35.
You really like those are bad incentives to put in a contract. You really have to think about like the principal agent problem that emerges from those contract incentives.
Yeah. Or once they're close down the stretch, you gotta just be like, all right, we're giving it to you. Just please shoot threes.
But I don't think they legally can just give that to him because I think it's part of it. It's an unlikely incentive, which is a way to circumnavigate the CBA. You can use unlikely incentives if you wanted to. So. Yep. Not allowed. And then a great move they actually made is they traded a 2016 top 55 protected second to Miami for Shabazz Napier, who'd been a first-round pick the year before. And then you look, Shabazz Napier now wasn't great with the Magic, but ended up being really good for the Blazers
He's
going to
stick in the league.
Yep.
I mean, he's definitely a guy. He's the kind of guy who you kick the tires on. That's basically what they did there. And he, you know, didn't pan out for them, but it's still a good move.
And that was definitely the most active offseason we'd gotten from them at so far in this rebuild. And look, that's good activity. Look, there was some really bad stuff there.
I mean, if you thought 2015 Magic was bad, you're going to hate 2016 Magic.
Oh. Well, we'll get but there.
Anyway.
Yeah. And so then January 12th, 2016, the Magic traded for Joe Harris in what amounted to a salary dump for the Cavs, and then immediately waived Joe Harris.
Which, I mean, nobody thought Joe Harris. Plenty of teams had a chance at Joe Harris and waived him, but he definitely has value now. Joe Harris is another guy who would the Magic would probably love to have.
Absolutely. And look, I don't think he would have developed the way he developed in Brooklyn if he'd stayed with the Magic, but that said something about the organization that I don't even feel confident enough in their development. You know, it's right. One of the reasons why the old Magic regime was frustrating, and you have to, like, I'm going to give this new regime a chance. I don't feel great about them yet, but, you know.
Yeah, it just comes back to there's been a lot of talent there, and it hasn't really amounted to much.
And then February 16th, 2016, they made one of the worst moves of this rebuild when they traded Tobias Harris to the Pistons for Ersan Ilyasova and Brandon Jennings. This was when they were trying to, like, compete, make the playoffs, and...
Yeah, that's a disaster. That's really bad.
It's an F. It's just... It's so bad. I mean, Tobias Harris was a central piece in the Blake Griffin trade, and look, that's a whole different conversation about how bad that trade was for the Pistons, but, like, Tobias Harris is good.
He's had value this entire time, and the guys that they got back, like, they basically lost him for nothing.
Absolutely, they gave him away for nothing.
And he was good for them. It's not like that's one of those guys who became something after he left. Tobias Harris was already good when he was on the Magic,
yeah,
and has only gotten better since leaving.
I mean, the only thing they got out of that trade is they then used Ersan Ilyasova as part of the Serge Ibaka trade. So, I mean, we'll get to that later, but...
Hold me.
And then February 18th, 2016, they traded Channing Frye to the Cavs, and they got Jared Cunningham at 2022nd in return, and they waived Jared Cunningham immediately. This was good. They got off that Channing Frye contract, which had multiple years left, you know, which it's finally expiring this season. And look, Channing Frye helped the Cavs a lot, but he wasn't going to help a rebuilding Magic team, really. So this is a good move. I was in favor of this trade at the time, and I stand by it. But at the same time, why
sign him in the first place?
Or even more, why are you trading Channing Frye, dumping a guy like a veteran who we see can clearly help a team win, when you just 2 days prior had traded Tobias Harris for two guys to make a playoff push? You know, right, logical.
There's really no internal logic or consistency there. It's just, again, it seems like they just did stuff just to do stuff. Or they tried because they thought they were smarter than everyone else.
Very frustrating. So then May 12th, 2016, Scott Skiles departs as head coach. And May 20th, 2016, they hired Frank Vogel as head coach.
So we're on head coach number three now?
Yes.
Okay.
Number three. Look, Frank Vogel, I thought he did a really good job with the Pacers. And he didn't have a lot of success with the Magic. My other concern...
The league may have passed him by. But also, he didn't really fit their roster.
Yeah, and my other concern with this is that, look, they only spent a week searching for a new coach. You know, from the 12th, they took a week to hire Frank Vogel on the 20th. And ultimately, you should probably spend a little more time thinking about the person you want to lead your franchise.
I mean, Vogel was probably seen as, I mean, that was coming right off of his Indiana time. You know, he's seen as one of the most highly coveted candidates. I'm sure they were really happy that chose them.
And it just
But sometimes that backfires.
Yep.
And so then, also, I mean, they just didn't have that, like, defensive-oriented veteran team. Although they did try a couple things to go in that direction.
Yeah, the first move to try to, you know, get some veteran defenders on the team, on June 23rd, 2016, the Orlando Magic traded Ersan Ilyasova, Victor Oladipo, the 11th pick, which became Zabonis, to the Thunder for Serge Ibaka.
Hasn't panned out.
That might be an F-.
There just was no reason, given their team position, they didn't really need Serge Ibaka. He's such a complimentary player that you put around other established stars whom they didn't have. They were just cutting bait, selling low on Oladipo, giving up another lottery pick. Like, think about that, you know? Serge Ibaka, lottery picks.
Who had 1 year left on his contract.
1 year of Serge Ibaka.
It's just... It's so bad.
Definitely a really bad trade. Super depressing. Like I said, you can kind of see what their outline was. They're like, we're going to build their own defense. But I guess they thought that Serge Ibaka by himself would be enough to give them a good defense, which he proved quickly that he was not. Or they went and got Biombo. I don't know.
Yeah. They also drafted Steven Zimmerman, 41st overall. And they traded the 47th pick to the Blazers for $1.2 million in cash. And a 2019 second round pick. Yeah, cash money.
Cha-ching. Not something a good team does that often. But I don't know. I remember thinking that Steven Zimmerman was going to be good.
Yeah, he was. I mean, he was hyped at UNLV, and there was some talk of him being a first round pick and everything. I thought that was good value at 41st overall.
I have no idea what he's doing now.
I mean, he's No.
In the G League,
good.
Probably?
Yeah, he plays a little in the G League. He's still around, but he's not good.
He's not good. Fair enough.
But look, he's still young. And it's very possible in 4 years he's something. It's just
could be the Whiteside path or something.
Yep. And so then the beginning of a really disastrous offseason.
There was a lot of bad money given out in 2016, and the Magic are very high on the list.
Well, before they even got around to giving out bad money, they, on June 29th, 2016, traded a 2019 second to Detroit for Jody Meeks. Jody Meeks, who barely played for them because he never stayed healthy with the foot problems that he had in Detroit.
And makes like kind of a lot of money, right?
Yeah, $6 million a year, and he had three years left on his deal.
$6 million a year of just dead cap space for a guy who, again, is not going to like change the overall ceiling of your team. He's not going to make you good. And you're giving up a second round pick in 2019. I'm sure at the time they're like, whatever, we're going to be good by 2019. No, you most certainly will not, Orlando. So yeah, that's another F.
And then on July 7th, 2016, they made a bunch of signings all at once to make it all work on the cap. So they signed Jeff Green to a one-year, $15 million contract.
Ooh.
They signed Bismack Biyombo to a four-year, $70 million contract.
What?
They signed Evan Fournier to a five-year, $85 million contract.
Yikes.
They signed DJ Augustine to a four-year, $29 million contract.
Ooh.
And they traded Shabazz Napier to the Blazers for cash considerations.
Oh, what a day.
That might be the worst day in NBA history.
Stop. That's hyperbole. If
they spent $199 million, and they got Jeff Green, Bismack Biyombo, Evan Fournier, DJ Augustine, and they gave away Shabazz Napier.
The best player?
Of that group, maybe? I mean,
he's probably Fournier not better than Fournier.
But the second best?
Fournier contract is like bad, but not unforgivable. No. The rest of those deals are all really bad. Giving 4 years to DJ Augustine? Like, why are you giving 4 years? Like, what are they doing? He's not a starter. What, he's like good enough to where he's going to start over Elfrid Payton, who you still have some draft capital invested in. Like, again, that makes no sense. The Biyombo thing after just trading for Ibaka not a great offensive.
They had Biyombo, Ibaka, Vucevic.
Like, no possible fit there. They're like, we'll just get a bunch of front court players and somehow that'll work.
And they drafted Steven Zimmerman. Like, you know what? Talk about the young guy, team blocking totally out the blocked. 41st pick. Look, the Jeff Green contract, $15 million is terrible, but 1 year, no harm, no foul, really. Imagine if they'd just been like 3 years, 40 to
that
Jeff
Green. Could have been awful.
Oh, yeah. Could have been so bad. So, should we go through and grade each one of these moves at an individual level?
I think we should just move on.
As an F for the day?
Yeah. A bad day.
We all have bad days. So then February 14th, 2017, after a disastrous start to a season where they were supposed to be competitive, they traded Serge Ibaka to the Raptors for Terrence Ross and a 2017 first. That's an A. You know what? That's a sunk. Like, thinking about the sunk cost of Serge Ibaka is dumb.
At least they got a first back.
Yeah, and Terrence Ross.
Terrence Ross is another guy. I mean, again, you know, he's just another guy they're cycling through. He's not a star. He's just another role player. A solid role player. A good guy. Doesn't change your destiny, ultimately, if you're a bad team. But to get that first, I think, you know, at least they didn't lose Serge for nothing, which is definitely what would have happened if they had allowed him to become a free agent.
Oh, yeah. I think that's good. That's a good move.
What were they thinking with that first Serge trade, though, you know? It's the kind of thing, like, as soon as that was approved, that was so clearly bad. He had 1 year left. He was never going to re-sign.
Well, I think it's
They really thought they were going to be good, and he would just want to stay.
I think it's a classic case of the GM having to try to save his job. And they were like, if we don't make the playoffs this year, I'm going to lose my job. Screwed. And going all in.
Yeah.
And
so, Connor, is the GM who made that move, does he still have his job?
Well, so on April 13th, 2017, the Orlando Magic fired Rob Hennigan as GM. That gets an A. Great move.
Yeah, I mean, Hennigan did a lot of bad things. I'm really glad to see the Magic move on from him, obviously. That, you know.
I mean, I'm sitting with the number one Rob Hennigan hater in the entire country right now.
I was, pretty vocal, at least among my friends, while Rob Hennigan was still employed by the Magic, that I thought he was one of the worst GMs in the league, and that I really didn't believe in what he was putting together over there. So on some level, I mean, you never want to see anyone lose their job, but I did feel like mildly validated.
Yeah, a lot of vindication on your takes for multiple years. Though it's not fair. If they'd kept those guys together, it could have worked out.
Yeah, they've had talent.
Then on May 23rd, 2017, they hired John Hammond as GM, who had been the GM for the Bucks before. That's a C. He'd done an okay job as GM of the Bucks.
Yeah, you know, he's a guy. Maybe C plus.
Yeah, I would have preferred maybe to give a young guy a chance, because ultimately the idea is just, in the same way that you can, like, you know what you get in a veteran player, you kind of know what you're getting in a veteran executive, and you kind of want people who have the upside of just, like, taking a new radical approach and everything. But I'm not going to kill them for that. He's not someone I consider one of the worst GMs in the league, and so it could be worse.
Right, exactly. And, like, I don't know. And middle of the road is just fine.
So then moving on to their first draft with Hammond at GM, June 22nd, 2017, they drafted Jonathan Isaac, 6th overall. They traded the 25th pick, which became Agence Pasechnik. Pasechnik is right. I don't know how to say first name. To the 76ers for the 2020 OKC first, which is top 20 protected and becomes 2 seconds if it does not convey.
Mm-hmm.
They drafted Wesley Iwundu, 33rd overall, and they traded the 35th pick, which became Ivan Rabb, to the Grizzlies for a 2019 second, which is the Nets pick. Thoughts on that draft as a whole?
Well, obviously, easily the most important part of it is Jonathan Isaac, who I like. I think that's a good pick, especially given the other people that were available there. I think, you know, I would have picked Isaac even sooner than that, probably, if I had had a high pick in that draft. I think his, like, future in the NBA, it's just really queer to see a role for him, basically. He can switch, guard multiple positions, like we talk about. He's really long, really athletic, and can shoot threes, assuming he can actually shoot threes. If he can't shoot, his ceiling goes down, but he's still, I think, has so much defensive potential that you're not, like, even if he can't shoot, he's still probably a guy. But he becomes, like, a Michael Kidd-Gilchrist kind of thing.
Yeah, so I liked the Isaac pick, too, but let me play a little devil's advocate with you. We've been, you know, really panning them throughout this podcast for the fact that they never acquired a superstar talent, and that's what this team's missing.
Yep.
And I have a hard time personally seeing Jonathan Isaac ever becoming more than the third best player on a championship team. That's why I view his ceiling right now kind of a defensive linchpin, but not enough creation on offense. Really can't be the focal point of a great team. Are you at all concerned that they didn't take a home run swing on a guy like, say, Dennis Smith, or, you know, I mean, Donovan Mitchell wasn't in any way projected there, but, you know, a type of guy who has a little more upside than what Isaac maybe has?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have hated Dennis Smith as the pick there either. I think both of those guys should have gone sooner than they did. I guess I think that there is a non-zero chance that Isaac becomes a star. First of all, he might be like a complimentary star, but that kind of guy, a guy who is excellent both ways and doesn't need the ball, even if he might not have like the big name of a star, I think that it's easy to see him being like one of the top 20, 25 most valuable players in the league. And so to me, that's a star, and that's good value for that pick. But again, that is him reaching his potential. But he's just so lanky, and like his shot looks really good. He moves well. I mean, it's interesting, though. He was only even a complimentary player at Florida State. Right. But I think sometimes with these guys, we, like, read a little bit too much into the college basketball season. And, you know, I mean, especially at Florida State, like, they had seniors on their team who were established. They were a good college team. Like, they were trying to win as many games as possible. But by the time he's 24, 25, I think Jonathan Isaac could be a totally different player than he is now. And just looking at his raw natural tools, especially if he gets good coaching, which I'm not entirely confident he will in Orlando, but I'd like to hope that he will, certainly. Yeah,
we'll
and if he does, then, I mean, I don't think it's out of the question. He could be a star.
Yep. And then the other moves, look, I think the trading the 25th pick for that OKC pick is a gamble. I don't love it. Look, that pick ends up becoming the 21st or 22nd pick later on. Then you turn the 25th pick in 2018 or 2017 into the, you know, 21st pick in 2020. And if you actually think about, like, depreciating value of assets, future assets and everything, that's probably not actually a good exchange of value.
And, like, why? I mean, why do that? You know, did they just think they had too many players? They didn't like anyone that was available? It's just a weird trade.
Yeah, and I would have liked more. I mean, they had the 33rd pick and the 25th. Like, why not try to package them and move up and maybe overpay
a
little?
It's the top 20 protection that really kills that trade.
Yep.
Even if it were just lottery protected,
then
it starts to be
better.
Like, okay, that could have been the 16th pick. Like, it was a decent gamble.
Right, but just the fact that the highest upside of it possibly being is going from 25 to 21, and that's you're having
that
3 years,
yeah.
And that's being incredibly lucky, just really not great. So then on July 9th, 2017, the Magic continued their annual tradition of overpaying a backup point guard when they gave Shelvin Mack a 2-year, $12 million contract. That's a D for me.
Just, right, like you're still paying DJ Augustine. You signed DJ Augustine to 4 years, $29 million. Like, why? What reason do you have for needing Shelvin Mack? Even if you do need another point, because you still have Elfrid Payton too. So let's say you want a third point guard. Sign a young guy off the street. It's your third point guard. You're bad. Why do you need to be paying Shelvin Mack?
Oh my God. It was so bad. It was just, look, I don't want to pan the Magic because I don't like to, like, make fun of these teams or anything. Just, they're doing all the stuff that if I was a diehard fan of the team, would just be making me so frustrated because
and now we are. Because we're embracing these rebuilding teams. Like, the Magic are one of our teams.
Right.
So, it's just sad. It hurts.
Right. And just looking back and be like, wow, this is how we got here because we made these mistakes. And now, hopefully, moving forward, we don't make mistakes like this. But we just, like, signing Shelvin Mack to 2 years, $12 million, you just can't do that at all.
No. Well, I mean, at least it's only 2 years. I don't know. It's already, like, over.
July 14th, 2017, they signed Jonathan Simmons to a three-year, $20 million contract. An important part about this contract is that it was a descending contract, so it gets, you know, progressively lower cap hit each year.
It'd be nice. They could look to trade him. I think Jonathan Simmons has value to a good team.
Yep, I think he definitely does, which means this is a good signing.
Maybe we could try to come up with a trade where he goes back to the Spurs. You see that? Remember that hug he got from Coach Pop last year? I mean, he's useful. Jonathan Simmons can play. I even liked some of what I saw from him on the Magic this year, but he's just another role player.
I think, look, he definitely would help a team like the Timberwolves. I could see the Pacers targeting him. There's a lot of contending teams that he could help a lot, and I think that you can get... Look, I'm not quite sure you can get a first-round pick for him, but if you maybe take a player who's an expiring contract but dead money... for Jonathan Simmons, then you can maybe get a first-round pick. Something like a Cole Aldridge and a first for Jonathan Simmons is in the cards, or maybe it needs to be a team like Houston, who they're thinking their pick is 27, 28, 29.
It's going to be a really, really late pick. Yeah, that's not out of the question. Or maybe you get a high second. I don't know. A first is a lot to ask, but you get something.
That was a positive signing. That was a nice signing last offseason. But then they also signed, in the 2017 offseason, Maurice Spates, Aaron Aflalo, and Kem Birch. And it's just like... I mean, why are we bringing back Aaron Aflalo? Why are we rolling out Maurice Spates?
Yeah, don't do that.
I mean, remember when we saw the Magic play and Maurice Spates was shooting just like every time he got the ball and he was just throwing up terrible shots against the Wolves, and it was just like, I mean, they have young guys on the court and Maurice Spates is shooting the ball like 12 times in a game. Like, that is taking away development time.
And again, he's not going to change your outcome. Like, what? They just cycle through these guys with no long-term plan. Like, just keep the cap space. You don't have to win 30 games. You can win 22 games.
And you get a higher pick. You know, the incentives are actually like you should want to
win
22 games.
They've been in this 5-7 range where they've been drafting for years. And your odds of getting a superstar are so much lower there than if you really bought them out and have a top 2 or 3 pick. Especially if you can get the number one pick.
Yep. And then on February 8th, 2018, they traded Elfrid Payton to the Suns for a 2018 second, the 41st overall pick.
I mean, obviously, that's not, like, good, given everything they gave up for Elfrid Payton back in 2014.
But if they'd reached the point where they viewed Elfrid Payton...
They're just ready to, like, give up on him, basically. I mean, at least getting a second for him is better than nothing.
And that's a good second. I mean, like, that's the
41st
pick.
Now that he's gone, like many other former Magic players, he probably will play considerably better.
Well, it's not their fault. He finally cut his hair. Of course he's going to be better.
I mean, Phoenix is potentially a good situation for them for him if he resigns there too. One of our other teams.
He needs to develop a jumper. That's the problem. He's not good enough with the ball in his hand to ever have a place in the NBA if he can't shoot.
At least hit open threes. Yep. Like wide open threes. Because they don't really guard him right now.
Yeah, so I'm not gonna pan that trade. That kind of strikes me. If you're actually down with Elfrid Payton, then like that's a B. Good job for converting him into an asset instead of just letting him go for nothing in restricted free agency. April 12th, 2018, they fired Frank Vogel as head coach. So we're now on to coach 4 of this rebuild, which May 30th, 2018, they hired Steve Clifford as head coach.
I mean, I guess, I don't know. Clifford is unfortunately has a decent amount in common with Vogel, where it's like, I do really like his track record. Is he enough? Is he going to be able to like make this work? I mean, they got to get some more talent in there. But I like Clifford in general. I think he's a smart coach. I think his teams play progressive style. They shoot.
Play hard.
They play D.
Yep.
I'll give him a chance there. But, you know, without considerably more talent, they're going to be stuck in this same position. And the biggest casualty looking forward is that they really have no cap flexibility.
I mean, if they bring back Aaron Gordon, they're capped out this entire summer. And next summer, they're going to have, you know, they'll have about $20 million.
And they have to bring back Aaron Gordon,
by
the way.
They have to bring back.
If anyone signs him, they have to match it. You can't lose Aaron Gordon.
Unless you do a sign and trade. You can talk to me about the idea of the op, because, like, if you really just think about this rebuild, is they're so screwed that we're, like, at the beginning of a rebuild again, and you have to, like,
Aaron Gordon is, like, he doesn't fit the timeline anymore. Yep. Might as well just keep flipping it over. I get that. And, I mean, we'll see who they get in this draft. I don't hate Trae Young as a fit there. They definitely just got to go for best player available. But they have no cap space.
Well, they're gonna. We're gonna be talking about the Magic for a few years to come.
The Magic will be in R5 in all likelihood.
Till I would bet to like 2020. I mean, the long time. We're gonna be following the Magic for a long time.
Well, that's kind of the whole story of the rebuild, right?
Yeah. Feeling. I mean, look, it's been as I think we've been the most negative during this one out of any of the rebuild recaps we've done.
It's coming from a place of love. Right. We're not Scott Skiles, Magic.
No. We're just. We're a frustrated parent who loves our kid very much, but we're just like, why do you keep getting kicked out of class?
We're just disappointed. Right. Anyway, thanks for listening. This has been the Truly Horrible NBA Podcast.
Leave a five-star review. Five stars. Yeah.
We love it when you do that. That's personally one of my favorite things. So, thanks.
Thank you very much. Have a good day, and talk to you next week.
Peace.